This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge their ongoing connection to lands, waters, and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian news and politics with a side of crispy memes. We're also the official podcast of the Auspol Ship Posting Facebook group. So if you hear us talking about memes or the group or the page or whatever, and you want to see that group or page or memes, you should search Auspol Snack Pod on Facebook and come and hang out. It'll be fun. I am Zach Lesnack. I'm just some guy. And with me is my co-host.
Hey, I'm Noon, also known as I Know Funkenstein on Facebook. Welcome back, Zach and listeners.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, everybody. It is always a pleasure, Noon. Appreciate you taking the time. We had a pretty good week.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, news about the podcast itself, we had a little write-up in Junkie. People who found us through our Steam Hams negative interest rates video, you'll know the video, and the video got written about in an article about how like Australians are using The Simpsons to make political points.
Yeah, I got interviewed by that by the journalist about that last week. And they also interviewed the admin of the Simpsons Against Liberals Facebook page, which obviously is like huge for me personally to be like platformed alongside that page,
who, by the way, like, we need to say thank you to for
sharing
the
absolutely
video, because like that was when it really took off,
so, and also for your service to memetics and memology in the Auspol scene.
Yeah, absolutely, shout out memes keeper Willie, good looking out. And we also, the video got shared by Adam Bant,
which wasn't one of our KPIs, as Zach mentioned last time, getting an article written about the meme was, but you know, being shared by an MP, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. We have, it hasn't been tested yet, but we have a no politicians on the podcast.
Yeah, unfortunately, we haven't been in a situation where we've been able to turn someone down. Sorry, you're not really what we want for the tone of the show.
We were debating what to comment on Adam Bant's share of the video, and I really wanted to comment, thanks, Adam, but we actually have a no politicians on the podcast policy, but we appreciate the share nonetheless. But probably better not to, you know,
bite the hand that shares.
Not at this stage, anyway. Thank you. If there's any new listeners from Adam's share or from the Junkie article, welcome. Thanks for joining us and like following through after watching our stupid meme. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think it's probably time for us to get into our entree.
Yeah, so this week, Zach, we're having the Ensuring Integrity Bill, which is a bill put forward by the Liberal government to crack down on unions, basically. And
a union-busting bill. I've heard of these.
By a Conservative government? It's more likely than you think. this is a bill they've wanted to have for ages, basically, since Tony was in power, I think, and Malcolm Turnbull actually initially brought it forward, and it's been like in the committee process until then, and it looks like it's probably going to pass in the next week, like the last sitting week of Parliament for this session of sitting. And the numbers of the parliamentarians who are voting for it aren't 100% locked in. Jackie Lambie and the Centre Alliance people are still like not 100% locked in. But it seems very likely that they will both end up voting for it.
So this is one of the few sort of major pieces of legislation that Labour is opposed, because, I mean, for reasons that you would hope would be obvious.
Yeah.
I guess we can't always take that for granted these days. The other kind of like fucked up detail about this is the way that Lambie has been holding her vote on this issue over the head of John Setka, who, you know, we have a strong fuck John Setka position on this podcast, and we're not making any comment about whether or not he's been good or bad for the union movement. I mean, he's been bad. He's a bad human.
We're not making any comment other than that.
Yes. But it's still a dick move for like a politician to hold union busting legislation over the head of an individual in order to force them to resign.
And so
go on.
Well, that actually kind of ties in nicely to what the bill is actually designed to do. And so the two main things that it does is basically introduce a way for the government to kick out union officials and a way to deregister the whole union. So one of the amendments that was put forward by the Center Alliance people would that there would be a like a demerit point system, kind of like for a driver's license, that if your union official files paperwork late, they get some demerit points. If they advocate for unprotected industrial action, they get some demerit points. And then once they hit 180, the government can just be like, you're out of there.
Which could, like, theoretically, that could consist of purely bureaucratic, like, errors.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So,
and
yeah, I've seen the comment floating around on Twitter that if passed, that this would be, like, the most anti-union legislation existing in any kind of, like, OECD country, which, I don't know. I mean, I didn't, like, go, I don't know, a huge amount about the union movement in other countries, let alone this one.
Yeah.
But that...
We are world leaders in, like, free market neoliberal shill policy. And, like, Australia repeatedly screws ourselves on free trade agreements with other countries because we just have such a fucking hard-on for free trade that we just, like... Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, take our money. Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's great. Free markets.
Workers' rights? I don't know.
Fuck them, yeah. So the other thing that the bill can do would basically to be, like, just stop a union existing anymore. And so for that, they'd need to meet 900 demerit points. And Christian Porter, the Attorney General, said that he suspects that within 1 week of the bill being passed, some union officials will be out, and within several months... some unions will be deregistered. So he's like really that's not even fucked. Fucking hiding it.
No. And like for it to operate that quickly as well. And like, you know, that this is being used as a political football, like on top of that. I mean, they're introducing this legislation in order to fuck with unions, but they're using even the act of the vote on the piece of legislation to also like...
strong arm union officials into doing what they want. Yeah, yeah.
It's a bad sign.
Yeah, it's pretty shitty.
Bodes poorly for working people.
This is my most hopeful angle on this.
Noon the optimist.
Yeah.
Once every few episodes.
Is that maybe if unions get deregistered, they will stop giving a fuck about protected industrial action, and we might get like wildcat strikes or mass strikes of other sorts that aren't protected, or like much more solidarity between unions that are currently like forced not to support one another by Fair Work.
Interesting theory.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's probably not worth deregistering unions until we find out. Seems like this bill is bad.
If we just made you guys like not exist, would you do more stuff?
You gotta flip it.
Let's find out. Yeah, who knows, like maybe it could be a hilarious backlash for the government, but honestly probably not. It's probably just another step on our way towards everybody being completely fucked.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that, I think that's enough about
absolutely. Now it's time for
Shitpost of the week.
Yeah, so Zach, you like to distinguish between the shit posts and the shit posts, and this one is I'm sorry to say it's a shit post. So this is one I actually shared into the group. Again, if you're new to the show, you can find the group. It's facebook.com/groups/OzPolShitPosting.
We normally like to give shit post of the week to Crunchy OC that's been posted in the group, but we didn't get like a whole bunch this week.
Yeah.
So Noon, you shared in this photo of a sign from a group called Bush User Groups United.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so this is a sign apparently on the property of Canning Vale Proprietary Limited Sawmills. And there's this large sign that's probably like head, it's like a couple meters across. And it says, to Daniel Andrews, sleazy, slimy, arrogant, ignorant, job terminator of Victoria, die you mongrel cunt.
Well, to be fair, it says C_T. You could be calling him a
coot?
Clit.
Or a clit, yeah. Or a crut. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if that's
croissant.
A thing, but it doesn't sound very good.
I really thought I was going to be able to think of more words that yeah, start yeah. with T. Anyway.
Cost.
Noon.
Yeah.
I know that this is a funny joke segment, but I wonder if you might give us some of the context for this hilarious shitpost.
Yeah, okay. So last week, the Andrews state government in Victoria announced that they're going to phase out native forest logging by 2030.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good. But the forests that they're logging will have been completely eliminated long before 2030.
That's bad.
But they have promised $120 million in funding to help the industry transition.
That's good.
But that's not going to be enough to retrain all those workers, and they're going to be impoverished.
Can I go now?
Yeah, yeah, you can. We can stop doing the Simpsons bit because probably like half the people listening got that we were doing a thing there. That's fine. Yeah, so this is a real mixed bag, this announcement from Daniel Andrews. They say they're going to protect 92,000 hectares of forest right now and then another 90,000 eventually. But yeah, it basically seems like they've picked 2030 as a date for the end of this industry because, A, that's long enough to plant a bunch of trees now in plantations that might be harvestable then, and B, because all of the forests that they're currently logging will have been just gone by then, so the industry will have stopped existing anyway. And this way they get some, like, brownie points from lefties and environmentalists for, like, saying they're going to do it.
Without having to actually do anything, really.
Yeah, that's right. But
in the meantime, also pissing off people who work in the logging industry, 100%. Hence this sign from Canning Vale Proprietary Limited Sawmills.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been a bunch of discussion about it in the papers on Facebook and so on, and like environmentalists being like, this is pointless and you're still killing Leadbeater possums, and loggers being like...
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
Leadbeater possums?
Pretty sure. Not 100... Leadbeater? What? No, I'm pretty sure it's Leadbeater. Whatever.
Yeah. Definitely not relevant.
Yeah. People being like, there are 20,000 logging workers in the state that are going to be destitute and shit. Actual numbers look like it's more like 2,000 than 20,000. But anyway, like, I mean, I think it is really important that we as like progressive environmentalists make sure that there are just transitions away from these destructive industries. Mm-hmm. And plantation logging is one option for that. But yeah, Vic Forests is a super fucked organization. They're the like state government forestry body, and they basically spend all of their time committing crimes, allegedly. please don't sue me, Vic Forests. I really can't afford that.
They're not going to fucking sue you. They're going to send somebody around
with a fucking,
to kneecap you with a...
Yeah.
With an axe.
Yeah.
I was like, what do they use to cut?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of protections, like you're not allowed to cut down a tree that has a diameter of more than 2 meters, but that shit happens all the time. And there's these really amazing photos of, like, maps of, like, Vic Forest, you're only allowed to log within this area, and then they've logged everywhere else except that area. And, like, just, like, hundreds and hundreds of hectares of land that is outside of the coops they've been allocated that they cut down anyway. Another thing is that it's against the law to cut down trees on a slope of more than 30 degrees, and that's because of water catchment reasons. So the trees keep the land in the same shape, and then that means the water runs down into the catchment that then goes to, like, Melbourne drinking water or not, like, rural drinking water and dams, that sort of things.
I mean, that's true, but if we cut down those trees, we can sell them.
Yeah, we could make them into toilet paper
for money.
And wipe our ass with the last, like, 500 years of... flora in the country.
Yeah, sounds like a good system.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so anyway, that's the shit post of the week, and it's also the shit policy of the week. Do you like that one?
Yeah, nice one.
Thanks.
Yeah. I feel like, was that policy written on toilet paper?
Yep. Well, it was written on fucking reflex paper made from
native trees.
Yeah. The whole thing's really very depressing, and
yeah, I mean, this is a news podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I hope everyone listening came in expecting to be sad.
This is mostly a podcast about things that are happening, which means...
It's bad.
It tends to be bad.
Speaking of bad, Zach, why don't we move on to our next segment?
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
Nice segue.
Thanks.
yeah. Okay, so this is a blurst take from Craig Emerson, who is an ex-Labor minister and now a political commentator. And
like investment advisor.
Yeah, and a lobbyist like on behalf of the fossil fuel industry. And,
KPMG.
Yeah. So it's weird that he has put out this think piece in the Australian Financial Review talking about, well, the title is Tribalism is Blighting Australia. And... It's look, there's a lot of like very regular big brain centrist stuff. Like, why can't everybody stop yelling at each other and just agree that I'm right? But like he specifically is talking about the way that people are talking about bushfires and trying to attribute their causes to climate change. But there's a couple of notable things about this think piece which make it especially shit very blurst take worthy. First is the pull quote from the article, which reads, "National socialism is resurgent, but so is international green socialism, a variant of white supremacism."
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So he's getting put on blast on Twitter by, you know,
anyone with half a brain.
Yeah. Anyone who vaguely cares about the environment, basically being like, why are you comparing greenies to Nazis? This is very unhelpful. Then Craig Emerson hopping back into his mentions. He loves to reply to people on Twitter, by the way, which like...
Cool. I mean, maybe that we can get into a beef with him. Our beef with the IPA hasn't really gone anywhere, but beef with Craig Emerson is pretty good.
We're working on it. essentially being like, hey, I never called anyone Nazis. What are you talking about? The only Nazis that I reference are the ones that imprisoned my grandfather. My father. And people being like, talking about national socialism, and he's like, yeah, well, that's not, you know, I wasn't talking about Nazis, I was talking about national socialism. So he's one of these people, you know, being a pedantic loser.
Yeah.
Go on.
Look, I don't want to get too much into the, like, many splinterings within the communist movement over the last century, but the, like, nationalism versus internationalism of socialism is really fundamental, and it's interesting that here he's like, national socialism, but so is international green socialism. Anyway, whatever, it's fine.
It's very dumb, and he kind of is making like, I mean, it the honestly, the, it's all over the place.
Yeah, he gets into Newton and like the Enlightenment.
Yeah, the inset photograph is this shitty painting of Isaac Newton, because Emerson keeps referring to the Age of Enlightenment as like, you know, something that we need to get back to. Like, this tribalism is so eerily reminiscent of the times before the Enlightenment, which, by the way, is like, has strong fucking racist undertones Like, oh, it wasn't until the great European white men decided that also, we should be nice to each other that real conversations
Newton was
to happen.
A giant fucking asshole, and like, tribalism is like a generous word for the way that he treated his rivals. That he was a fucking piece of work.
He makes lots of bad points. Another one of the bad points that he makes is basically saying that we should stop exporting coal as white supremacy because we're denying developing countries the opportunity to rapidly industrialize at the cost of the environment. And like, there is a broader kind of meta-historical truth to that statement, but in the way that he's deploying it here, where he's basically comparing people who want to stop climate change to Nazis is like, he's perverting that argument to the point of being effectively meaningless at best.
I also suspect that this article was written basically in response to Extinction Rebellion and to a lesser extent maybe the IMARC protests. You don't think so?
No. This is he got told off on Twitter for saying that, for basically agreeing with Barnaby Joyce's comments about the people who died in the fire in the current bushfires being Greens voters.
And so he wrote this article for the AFR being like, people were mean to me on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a great tweet out there. I think it's from Thomas Violence, at Thomas Violence, who is one of the people on the Bunta Vista podcast and potentially Australia's most successful tweeter. I know he had the highest, the most successful Australian tweet of last year. He's a good tweeter. You should check him out. And I'm pretty sure it was him that said, every right-wing columnist grifter, or like every, not even right-wing, every columnist grifter gets paid twice because they write a stupid article and they get to write a second one about how everybody was mean to them about the first one. And that's what this is. This is the follow-up. And that's why it's about tribalism and that's why the headline's about tribalism.
Right, because Craig Emerson is a centrist and anyone who argues with him is a tribalist, Nazi, and or communist.
It's such a fucking big brain centrist article. Like this, it's the whole thing is just like, people on the right and left is so rude and mean. Look, we've spoken about this long enough. The one thing that I really wanted to point out is that the main reason that this blew up is because it was shared by none other than Annabelle Crabb with the caption, "This piece in The Fin today by Dr. Craig Emerson is so good that I'm unilaterally releasing it from the paywall. There must be a better way." So,
wow.
Just amazing that this absolute, like, First of all, it's just a dog shit piece of writing. Yeah. Like, if you read it's extremely badly written, all over the shop. For other journalists to be like, you have to read this incredible piece of writing. It's like, it's just, they're all so obsessed with this idea that now that the internet has enabled people to actively tell them on a personal level that they are wrong about something, suddenly the discourse is destroyed and we've lost all sense of civility.
It was great when journalists could just be friends with politicians and not have any accountability from the general public.
Yeah. Do you want a job writing for the Financial Review?
Fuck yeah, I do, dude. Yeah,
hook me up. Do you want to fucking be the political editor for the ABC?
Yeah.
Because...
I know you're joking, but I'm not.
You are knocking it out of the fucking park right now. Look, fuck Craig Emerson, fuck Annabelle Crabb, and all of the big brain centrists at all of these all these centrist establishment media institutions who basically can't pull their heads out of their own asses long enough to acknowledge that we need to actually work together against climate change. Not in the way that they think, which means that everybody should just agree that we should keep doing nothing.
Yeah.
In the way that we should all work together to do something and not just spend all our time having to talk about how sensitive these overpaid journalists are.
Mm.
Well, you know, I mean, to be fair, I feel like we brought that last part on ourselves, but...
Talking about it. It was our own fault. We could have chosen not to, but also,
I wanted to yell about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, next up is another story that you might want to yell about, Zach, which is our First Nations stories. And we've actually got two here. Do you want to run us through those?
Yeah. So following on, I guess, from Annabelle Crabb, and she wasn't the only ABC, like high-profile ABC journalist who shared this article being like, this is genius.
So thoughtful.
Yeah.
Mm.
Following on from that, I just wanted to draw attention quickly to an article by Jack Gibson, writing for Indigenous X, who, if you don't know, is a great independent First Nations outlet, I guess, for writing and journalism. And the title of the article is Media and White Blinkers. And basically, it's about the way that the ABC in particular reported on the death of Kumanjayi Walker, which we talked about last week on the podcast. And... there's just a couple of quotes here that I think are really, really salient and good to remember, that even coming from like the mainstream media institution that is supposed to be our kind of bastion of, of objectivity and like representing the national interest, is that they just did an awful job reporting on this story and basically victim blaming the Aboriginal community, that Kumanjayi Walker came from, and also valorizing the cop who shot him.
Yeah.
He
keeps being referred to as a decorated officer and all this sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Which is like,
and coming from like a prominent family and
completely irrelevant in all senses, unless you're trying to justify protecting him.
Yeah. And also uncritically parroting the statements from the Northern Territory Police saying that, you know, they have full faith in that the officer was. Look, we're not going to get into it because, you know, talking about this stuff is a bit fraught at the moment, just from a legal perspective. But there's this one quote we wanted to bring attention to from this article by Jack Gibson, which is he's talking about the white supremacy of the ABC's perspective on this. And he says, "I don't mean white supremacy of the KKK kind. I mean the supremeness of whiteness as entrenched in the very racialized Australian systems and institutions that maintain oppression over and positions Aboriginal people into some fabricated social order."
I think that's really good. I don't mean white supremacy of the KKK kind. I mean the supremeness of whiteness. I think that's a really useful way of rephrasing that term that points out the sort of like systemic underlying nature of it rather than necessarily being an active decision of people who like specifically hate people of color or whatever, that the whole organization is based around the supremacism of whiteness.
Yeah. Totally. And it's, I guess to me, it seems like a relatively basic conceptual distinction that differentiating between individual acts of
discrimination or prejudice
versus like systemic oppression and like institutionalized injustice. But it's something that people really struggle with.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads us into the second First Nations story that we wanted to touch on this week. And like most weeks when we talk about First Nations news, it's really awful stuff.
Yeah.
And this week is no different, and we wanted to, the fact of the matter is just it's bad news every week in terms of, the way that First Nations people are still treated in this country. So, I don't know. We're going to try in the future, I guess, to be a bit more proactive about finding positive and empowering stories as well, because we do focus a lot on state violence against First Nations people.
I also think it's important not to ignore it when that is what the news story is, and all too often that's what has been happening. So I think that's part of the reason that we choose to keep bringing you these upsetting stories. So
Totally, absolutely. It's a fine line to walk, and obviously, you know, something that we need to keep being critical of and interrogating our kind of motives and those kinds of things. But anyway, the idea of failing to distinguish between acts of individual discrimination as opposed to systemic or institutionalized racism has sort of reared its head again this week in the case of David Dungay, who was a Junggadi man in the Sydney area, and he died in custody in Long Bay Jail in 2015. He was being held in a cell and refused to stop eating a packet of biscuits when he was instructed to, and was dragged out of his cell by 5 security officers.
Held down on the ground while he was saying, "I can't breathe," 12 times.
And then injected with a sedative, and then he died. And so this week was the coronial inquest into his death, and the New South Wales coroner found that none of the security officers were culpable for his death.
He said something like there was no malicious intent in the guards' actions.
And he says that their conduct was limited by systemic inefficiencies in training and was not motivated by malicious intent, but was a product of misunderstanding. And this is getting at what we were talking about, right? Because, okay, so I can't, you know, as a coroner, determine that all 5 of these people...
like active white supremacist Nazis or whatever.
Yeah, but it's not the KKK white supremacy. Mm. It's just what they have been taught systemically from birth, and specifically...
in their training.
In their capacity as security officers.
Sorry, yeah, as jail guards, yeah.
So, okay, you can't prosecute the individuals. There's no way to really, like, I guess they can sue the prison, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is white supremacy in action. This is what injustice looks like. And his family was fucking furious.
And now also, the white supremacy is also present not only in the killing of this innocent guy who was eating biscuits, because he was eating biscuits, but also now in the, like, systemic analysis of what's going on that gives those people a free pass. Like, it's not just the violence that's reflects the white supremacy in the system, it's also the cover-up and the lack of culpability that is, like, proactively enforced by the government body and the coroner, whose, like, job is to help the victims and the family of the victim find justice, and instead they're like, oh yeah, well, it wasn't really that bad. And like, that's white supremacism as well.
Massively. So those are just 2 things we wanted to touch on this week in terms of First Nations news.
So now we're going to move on to our main course, and we're having a bacon sandwich.
A triple bacon sandwich.
Yeah, there's the cop bacon and the
military bacon,
and then the racist politician bacon,
all wrapped up into one disgusting greasy bacon sandwich, which, let's just make it clear, neither you nor I would eat.
No, yeah, that's right.
not literally or figuratively. Okay.
Yeah, so why don't you explain that long, convoluted food metaphor, Zach?
New listeners, welcome to Forced Food Puns, the linchpin of this
the
entire
half-hour
fucking
show.
Podcast. Ah, jeez. Okay, so this week, the Australian Defence Force and Victoria Police engaged in some exercises, military training exercises called Exercise Austral Shield.
I just sort of saluted. By reflex, just hearing the phrase "Exercise Austral Shield." Oh, did
really
it again!
Work on that saluting reflex. I feel like it happens every couple of episodes. No, seriously, you can put your hand down now. So, this is in the wake of amendments to the Defence Act, which came into effect in June earlier this year. Basically saying that while states and territories retain responsibilities of first responders to domestic security incidents, the Commonwealth can now, quote, more easily respond to requests from states and territories for ADF assistance, so they can send in the army much more easily, And additionally, where they used to need the approval of the Prime Minister or the Attorney General to do this.
Sorry, either the Prime Minister or the Attorney General and the head of Defense Department.
Yes.
So there was like several reasonably difficult channels.
Yes. And now they have said that also you can get the approval of the Home Affairs Minister.
It just happens to be fascist potato Peter Dutton.
Yes. So basically they've made it much easier for the government to send in the army to combat what they are calling domestic violence. There's a few levels of fucked here. I haven't even gone into what exactly the specific training exercise was.
Yeah.
Maybe let's first unpack this domestic violence thing first a little bit. So this is their terminology that they are using to describe, you know, domestic terrorist incidents, basically. And Christian Porter, the Attorney General, has said the new laws are aimed purely at terrorist incidents, but were titled, quote, domestic violence because, quote, distinguishing between one type of violence and another is something that terrorists could very easily use as a cover for events.
Which is fucking wild. Because, like, it's not like this is a change in the law that would mean that terrorist activity now would be charged as the same type of offense as domestic violence offenses. It's just a rhetorical device that the government are using to explain why they've made it so much easier for the military to come in. And they're being like, well, yeah, it's for domestic violence. Like, they've just decided that now terrorism is domestic violence.
But it, and also has the obvious, like, flip side effect of muddying the definition of that term.
Right.
Which means it's going to be, like, you know, and co-opting this idea, I guess, of, like, we all know that domestic violence is wrong. Like, it's
totally.
Just the most sickeningly fucking cynical co-opting of the language describing something which they do nothing to address, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, we have a genuine fucking epidemic of domestic violence in this country, of actual fucking domestic violence in this country.
And in fact, you, like, something that I've seen from anti-domestic violence activist groups like Mad Fucking Witches, who are a great organization, and others that basically say something along the lines of, domestic violence is such a widespread scourge, we should consider it terrorism because it's effectively political violence against a discriminated group, i.e. women, at the hands of men, and that it's like a form of political violence.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not sure about sort of the, like, legal aspect of that or whatever, but, like, that makes sense to me, at least on a sort of public rhetoric level. And this, like, exact reversal of that tactic is just so disgustingly, transparently self-serving and, as you say, just, like, tramples over the experience of people who are actually suffering from domestic violence.
Like, yeah, this shit is, like, it's kind of mind-blowingly disgusting. So we've got, the government is making it much easier to send in the defense force into, like, to deploy them domestically,
yep.
Which already, okay, that's fucked.
Yep.
The person who they've enabled to do that more easily is Peter Dutton.
Mm-hmm.
That's also fucked. They've co-opted the term domestic violence for their own purposes. Very fucked. But the actual details of, like, the exercise that they carried out to practice what it would look like to, you know, enact this new legislation is super fucked. So we're going to introduce a new segment this week, and probably most weeks now.
Unfortunately, it's going to be a regular thing.
Yeah. Here's that sting. Fasci Australia. So the training exercise Austral Shield was specifically training the army and the cops to collaborate in order to stop people attacking coal-fired power stations.
Yeah.
Specifically, they carried this out, this training exercise out at Loyang Power Station, which is owned by AGL and Alinta. So this is all in the name of, you know, protecting critical national infrastructure and, you know, blah, 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 energy, this and that. But the ADF has put out, like, a promotional video about this training exercise with, like, you know, bland corporate music and some, like,
nice bush scenes.
Yeah, and a few little, you know, some nifty motion graphics and that kind of
jackboot
thing.
Jackboot people arresting a brown man.
And this is, so part of the...
Like, you couldn't make that shit up.
No, you couldn't. So part of the training is then practicing arresting, like, local dissidents.
Yeah.
Who might be participating in, like, anti-coal-fired power actions. And there's they've got this video of basically the cops and the army showing up at someone's front door, talking to them and then putting cuffs on them. And they just happen to cast a brown guy in that role.
Yeah.
Which is...
I wonder who they think is going to be committing this domestic terrorism.
My God. So, you know, there's like... Yeah, a bunch of other stuff you can check. We'll post the video. You can, you know, see the way that they are very openly, you know, obviously part of the idea of this tactic is that it's discouraging to people who might think about carrying out direct action against coal-fired power plants. Because, hey, we've literally practiced sending the army in to stop this happening. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've put out this, like, cute little video about it. So, yeah, you know, I mean, Australia has always been pretty fashy, but it's only getting fashier.
Yeah.
I can see that sting getting a real good workout. And, you know, obviously you have to kind of contextualize this in the broader context of this, of not just our federal government, but our state governments cracking down on protests. And this is both Liberal and Labor.
Yeah. You know,
Dan Andrews, Richard Marles, Anastasia Palaszczuk, is that how you say it?
Yep.
Have all basically been like, yeah, no, direct action is
terrorism.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's conducted by people who have nothing better to do and just out for some experience and, like, you know, we stand with the cops and stuff. So, yeah, you know, we don't have a viable mainstream political alternative to jackbooted fascists at the moment, really.
No.
Which is, you know, it's
not
pretty,
ideal.
It's pretty cool. Oh, it's not good? It's bad.
I'm going to go with bad. Okay. I know that's a contentious view.
No, look.
I know you're right. Call me a rabid left-wing radical.
A fucking paid protester.
Yeah.
And I wish. Paid for this.
Yeah. Any shadowy financiers out there, you know, slide into our DMs.
Please do. Oh, my God. Okay.
We're going to need a lot more funding to take on the military now.
We have, that triple bacon sandwich.
Oh, filled me right up.
Yum.
With greasy fascism.
Oh.
Cool. I think that's us for the week.
Bacon fash. Bacon fat?
Making fascist bacon.
Never mind.
Fascist pancakes? Something. Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap up the show.
We got a review last week from Ali Jackson on CastBox, and we discovered another review that was also on CastBox from, like, several months ago that we have, like, not read out because we didn't see it.
Like, for context, when we get reviews, we encourage people to review the show on iTunes if they like it because, you know, we're trying to boost the show in the rankings and the ratings and help people find it. But as far as we were aware, iTunes was, like, the only place that you could leave a review for a podcast. I think maybe you can review on Stitcher as well. We didn't realize that people could leave review on CastBox. Leave reviews on CastBox.
Yeah.
So if you neglected them.
If you have left a review on a page somewhere and we haven't read it out loud on the show and you'd like us to, please message us on Facebook or at ozpolsnackpod@gmail.com and we will hunt down your review and read it out.
Yeah, you bet. So, yeah, we're just going to read these two out that we neglected to read. This first one is from Ali Jackson.
It's not often that I bother to leave a review and even consider subscribing to a $1 Patreon, but this podcast is so juicy, so damn delish, that I did at least one of these things. Each week I'm served with a pretty tasty snack to make engaging with this world mildly less depressing. Nom nom nom. Thanks,
Ali. That's very sweet,
Ali. It is kind. And we really appreciate you doing one of those two things. It's really nice.
Whichever one it was, thank you.
Yeah.
We also have a review from presumably months ago from Seamus Byrne, who says, Ozpol Snackpod is a refreshing break from the abundance of true crime shit pods my friends keep telling me to listen to. Not only have Zach and Noon condensed some truly complex topics into manageable chunks without losing any nuance, they do it in a versatile format. You can listen to this podcast at work, at the gym, while you're running, while topping, and while bottoming. Well done.
Thanks, Seamus. I hope people aren't listening to this while they're topping and bottoming. But, I mean, maybe.
Why not?
If you're into it, I guess.
And, look... one free bonus episode to whoever can guess if Noon and I are either a top or a bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Leave your answers in positive reviews on iTunes.
And of course, check us out on Facebook and leave a rating and review. Send us to your cousin who likes Ozpol and isn't a fascist. Hop on Patreon if you like the show. You can support us if you give us $1 per month. That's just 25 US cents a week. You get a bonus episode of Snack Pod each month, and you get some extra Zach and Noon time.
Yeah. I think that's probably it. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well.
Yep, I've been tweeting this week.
Yeah, Noon's been tweeting. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I enjoy the tweets. You know, the Facebook page, our stupid meme continues to fucking blow up much more than our actual hard podcast work.
Which is fine.
That's
fine. No
totally
complaints.
Fine. Look, thank you, Adam. I know you're listening. I appreciate it. And thank you for signing up as a $100 a month Patreon supporter. We really appreciate that as well. We will not vote for you, but thanks nonetheless.
It was worth a shot.
Yeah, we'll catch you down at Friends of the Earth. Maybe we can share a lentil bowl. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.